have a problem. Think it might be all in your head. Talk with a counselor, or maybe a psychic instead. Doesn't matter how you roll, when life has taken such a toll. Clench and fist along with your screams. I'm here to heal your mind, and we are here to heal your soul. Time to follow your dreams. Side by side. Side by side.
Hi, and welcome to Side by Side, a show where we use two different perspectives to achieve the same goal. I'm Sheena Metal, and I'm a psychic medium and an energetic healer. With me, as always, is my co-host Diane Katz, who is a mental health educator. And each week on the show, we are working to get people the help and the healing they need side by side. Welcome, Diane. How are you?
Welcome, Sheena. I am fabulous. Great to be here and see you, my friend, and fabulous host.
Yeah, it's so great to be here with you. We decided to try something a little different today. Every week on the show, we have three guests, and we pick a topic, and we help them work through whatever their issue is. But we thought it would be fun this week to just sort of have it be the two of us and let you, the listeners, get to know us a little better so that when we are working with people every week on the show, you understand a little bit who we are, and we thought that might be fun.
Whoopee!
Yeah. Because, you know, we've known each other for so long that we already know who we are. So maybe sometimes you're listening to us and you're thinking, I don't understand what's happening right now. So we thought we would just give you, like, a little bit of insight into who we are. Diane, why don't you go first? I'm going to let you go first and just talk a little bit about you and all the cool things you've done in your life, and then we'll just kind of interview each other through this hour.
Have I done cool things in my life?
Oh, yeah. You've done a lot of cool things in your life.
Well, let's see. Where do I start? As most of you know, I am a musician, mm-hmm. and entertainer. I am also an author and writer. I have written for several magazines for decades, and have been using that to get on red carpets and interview the celebrities and done some stories about them as well. And I have a book out that I put out years ago called Love Hurts, and that's on people who are addicted to relationships. And I have a new book coming out called Anxious Personalities. And that will deal with people who are suffering from any type of anxiety. And I've lived a pretty good life so far. I've had some wonderful times in the early 80s, playing in bands when I was a teenager, and rock in Hollywood. Mom let me leave school a few times to go do some gigs. And yeah, there's a little bit more about me. How about you, Sheena?
I started playing music when I was very little, when I was four, and then fell in love with acting and let music sort of fall by the wayside. Was an actor 24/7, and then wound up doing a little TV show about music and wound up back in the music industry, where I worked for decades, both as a musician and also as a music journalist and a music publicist and a live music promoter from decades. I fell into radio accidentally. Somebody offered me to take over their show for a night. They were trying to get out of it, and it'll be 30 years in August, and I never left.
Oh, wow.
Wound up radio was a huge, huge thing in my life. I always say that three times in my life, I feel like the hand of God has touched me. The first time I ever went on a stage to perform as an actor, The first time I sat behind a radio mic, and then later in my life after my mom passed, when she gave me the message to take all of my spirituality that really fueled my art and everything I did and flip-flop it, open a spiritual practice to help people and heal people and have my spirituality be in the forefront. I always say now I wear my underwear on the outside. And that was really the third time. The first time that I did a spiritual reading for somebody, I kind of felt that hand of God feeling again, which has sort of been for me how I've been guided through three very different phases of my life and knowing that that was exactly where I was supposed to be. But even as an actor, even as a musician, as a journalist, whatever I was doing, it was all about helping people.
Yeah.
It was all about putting people where they needed to be to help them on their path. Just now I call it that, but I think I really always did that. It's a funny story. I was at a friend's birthday party sitting next to a minister friend of mine. I had just gotten the hit to from spirit to become ordained. Spirit is what I call God energy. And I was really nervous about it. Never in my life did I think I would be a minister. And he's actually the one that got me into the church where I'm pastored, Founders Metropolitan Community Church in Hollywood. And I said, I don't even know how to be a minister, Steve. What am I doing? And he said, but really, hasn't everything you've done in your life really been ministering? Mm-hmm. And I thought about it and I thought, yeah. And I think it's so important in our lives when we look at our life, because a lot of my clients, they're worried that they're not on their life path. They're worried they're not on their spiritual path. They're worried their life path and their spiritual path don't come together. It's so important to realize that everything you do is for a reason. There are really no accidents. And if you think about your life as one giant circle of light, everything that happens for you leads to something else, right? So everything that you did, Diane, as a musician, helped you as a journalist. Everything you did as a journalist and a musician ultimately helped you work as a mental health educator. Like everything that we do informs everything we do. And I think if we look at our lives like that, there's a lot less internal chaos in there, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think everything intertwines. And I just realized something, another thing we have in common, Sheena. Mm. I too wanted to be an actor. And at a very young age, mom put me in acting school to get theatrical training.
Nice.
And I did that for many years and then went on in high school. You know, of course, I went to the drama and department and did all that. But, you know, there's nothing like being in a band. You get instant gratification being on stage as a musician. And I like that much better than, you know, being in plays. But I did plenty of them. So I related to that with you.
Now, where did you go to acting school?
Community theaters. My mom put me in those.
Yeah. Nice. That's great. That's fantastic. You know, I tell a lot of my friends, I've recently moved back to my hometown, which is coincidentally your hometown. And I've reconnected with a lot of my friends from high school that I was in theater with. And I have this big group now that I've put together. I call it Thespians Who Lunch. And every month we get together. And it's so nice to see everybody. Everybody's so wonderful still. And a lot of times, a lot of them have left the industry and they're not working in the arts at all. Mm. And sometimes they get sad about that. And I always say, you know, go volunteer for a community theater. I tell my musician friends, if you don't want to do it full time anymore, go to open mics or, you know, go sing in your church choir. Do something so that you feel like that artistic part of yourself is being fed, because that's so important for us. That flame is always lit. I think when you're an artist, you sort of beat to, you know, you march to the beat of a different drummer, you know, pun intended with you, because you are a different drummer. But you need, you know what I mean? It's so important that you, it's just so important that you keep that going. You keep that flame alive. Whatever your passion is, you don't have to stop doing it. You know what I mean? Like if you wanted to be a pro football player and for whatever reason, you got injured, it didn't work out. You know, you can still coach, you can play in a fun league. You don't have to stop your life because didn't get, it doesn't have to be all or nothing, right? You can, and that's how I feel about acting now. People ask me to act in their stuff. I say yes whenever I can, but I'm not out pounding the pavement and actively pursuing it because now my life is about being a video and radio host and helping people to get their stories out there, and then working as a healer and a psychic medium and helping people. But it doesn't mean I'm not still an artist. You never have to give it up. You just have to, you know, find the right place for it.
Yeah. Now, when you were in high school and you came out as a thespian.
I did. Yes.
Did you find that everybody thought the drama department was really weird and strange?
I think everybody thought I was so weird and strange that maybe that's where I belonged. You know, I always looked very normal. So I'm from Connecticut, and I've always been, I like very New England tailored preppy L.L. Bean kind of clothes. So even at like 15, I look like someone's attorney. But because all my weird's on the inside, like a lot of people wear their weird on the outside. Mm-hmm. And for me, all my weird is on the inside. So I do think that I think people just kind of left us alone. It was funny because even the theater, like the room where our classroom was painted black because it was also a black box theater where we did plays at lunch. And so everywhere we ever were was painted black on the inside. So it was kind of like we were in a cave and we all just kind of hung out in that cave. Like we ate lunch in there and we did our homework in there. We went there after school. Like we just lived in this little like black bubble.
Oh, that's funny.
I think a lot of other people just thought, oh, okay, that's the theater people. They live in their own place.
Yeah.
And that was perfectly okay with me. I mean, I had some friends that weren't, but most of my friends from school were in high school, were in choir, theater, and band. And you know what? Most of my friends, most of my life were that way. So it's, you know, it's okay. It's all
yeah.
good.
Yeah, my high school, they thought all the drama department were very strange, and of course, band too. But I got away with it because I loved being in drama. But at the same time, I was playing in Hollywood, and I was on KROQ at the time, and so I kind of got a little bit of the celebrity status at high school. So it didn't matter if I was in the drama department, but I overheard, you know, what people would say about the people in drama, and it really hurt my heart because I'm like, hey, we're just people, you know, we all just want to do our art, you know, and get out there and have some fun. But it was sad to know that people thought they were all nerds and weird and strange. Well, maybe we are, you know, in some sort of way. But I wanted to tell you this, Sheena. I wanted to be in the band. I wanted to be in the marching band. And I thought it was the coolest thing. And I went to the department to try out on drums. Now, there were no girl drummers back then. Maybe in music, you know, there was the Runaways and so forth. I think she was one of the very few girl drummers. But in my high school, there were no girl drummers. And so I went to try out, and he told me that, nope, girls do not play drums. So I was not allowed to play the drums.
Oh.
How bizarre is that?
Okay. We had a girl drummer, but she was this kind of giant, hulking woman. And she, when they were in orchestra, they put her in a tuxedo. She didn't wear a dress.
Wow.
Because all the drummers were in tuxes, so they put her in a tux also. So I guess there was that idea that drummers had to be men. It's life is so strange, right? It's so nice. I'm so happy now. I have a niece who's 15, my best friend's daughter, and it's so nice to see now how they don't have to live in this kind of box like we lived in. You know, they don't have to be a certain way. One of the problems I had as an actor was that I didn't look like other actors that were 18, 19 years old. And so when I started working, people didn't know what to do with me. Even when I was on radio, most female radio hosts at the time were either these very sort of overly serious therapists, or they were models or weather girls, or no, there was nobody like me. And they would always say, like, if you were a man, we'd know what to do with you, but we don't know what to do with you. And I think it's so great that we've broken out of that. And the younger generations coming up, they look and they feel and they act and they identify all different kinds of ways, and nobody cares.
I know.
That's a true sign of evolution. And when people say, oh, what's going to happen when these kids take over the world? And I'm like, Are you kidding? I'm in and they can all change my diapers.
Oh, that's funny.
Because they're conscientious and they're responsible and they're decent people. You know, I work with these two influencers named Mackie and Amanda. They're paranormal investigators. They have like 600,000 YouTube followers. And I'm, you know, here I am, a bigger lady, you know, in my 50s, hanging out with these two girls that are like 20 and look like Barbies, literally. And thousands of comments, right, every time I work with them. And never anything nasty, never like she's old, she's fat, all the things you would have heard when we were kids, everybody would have been saying. And every once in a while, I'll get a comment that makes like a fat joke. And I'll click on the YouTube profile and it's some old guy like my age with a big white beard. These younger kids, they don't think like that. They don't at you like that. They're different. And I think it's such a beautiful thing that we're growing out of so many of the things that everybody dealt with as kids. Right. And we're just, they don't care anymore. It's so nice.
I know it's a whole different world.
They're becoming good people. Did you see that? Because you worked for a long time with young people, right? As a mental health educator. Did it make you hopeful for the future?
Back then, you know, when I was younger, and working with kids, you know, I didn't know that we were going to come to these places where so many things were accepted today. Over time, you know, it became little by little, you know, people getting out there and expressing themselves. And before you know it, you know, or before you knew it, it was accepted and people were more tolerant about all kinds of issues. Did I see it coming? No, I didn't. I couldn't even fathom some of the things that are going on today back in my high school days. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, it's I never did either. I never thought it would be different. And I don't even realize it sometimes until I watch a show that has young people in it. And then I go back and I see a movie from the 80s. My best friend's husband loves to watch all these movies from the 80s. She always says, she walks in the room and says, oh, look, it's 20 hours of programming from 1980. And it kind of is. And I think, oh, wow, there was a lot of like meanness and bullying that we just thought were okay. Like you just had to deal with it, whether it was folks who were, you know, differently abled or different ethnicities or different religions or on the queer spectrum or whatever it was, anybody who was different, women, there were all these jokes, right? And it was just accepted that that would just be how it was and you had to put up with that.
Oh, yeah. And I put up with quite a bit too.
Right. We all did, right? Whatever it was, you were too much of this, not enough of that. Something was wrong with you. And we all just learned to have a thick skin and laugh it off. But isn't it nice now for these kids that it doesn't exist so they don't have to go through that?
I know. Do you ever get jealous about it? I you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish we could have done this and this and this in my day. You know, I don't know. I'm a little envious.
A little bit. You know what I'm envious of? I was thinking the other day about how great it is for them because I was thinking about Shazam. I love Shazam, the app. Do you have the app Shazam?
No, I don't, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so you hear a song, right? And you just Shazam it and you instantly know what it is. I remember falling in love with songs when I was young and literally racking my brain trying to figure out what that song was. And it took months and months and months sometimes to hear it again. Now I hear a song, I Shazam, you go to YouTube, done. I am envious of all of the information they have at their fingertips at such a young age. I wish I could have had all of that, you know, when I was 10. I think I wish somebody had stuck a cell phone in my hand when I was 10 years old and I would have had like an unlimited library encyclopedia. Mm. You know, music encyclopedia.
I know, growing up in the 80s, if I could have done videos back then, oh my gosh, I was such a ham. You know, I still am, but but I mean, it just would have been amazing.
Yeah. But do you do them now?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I'm going to get into more stuff. But, you know, I'm in a completely different mindset now.
Yeah.
You know, after becoming a mental health educator and going to grad school and getting that kind of degree, everything sort of makes you 10 times more serious than you were when you were, you know, very young. So
yeah, that's true.
But I had my heyday, and I'm telling you, I loved the 80s. That was my favorite time. So many great things to look back and, you know, with memories. And I don't regret one bit of it.
No.
I'm kind of glad we didn't have the internet back then, because I got away with a lot of stuff that... You know, and I saw a lot of stuff, too, that, whoa, I mean, I can't even believe half the stuff that I saw as a teenager in Hollywood. You know, when my mom, you know, I'd go up to L.A., and my mom thought that the guys in my band were my chaperones. And, you know, they're off somewhere partying and having sex with whoever. And I'm sitting there just looking around and seeing at, you know, in these parties and just going, wow, what an education I got back then.
Yeah. And, you know, I think some of that's the 80s, but I also think some of that's the music industry, because I 100% got my education in people from the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice sometimes when I'm talking to people that aren't in the music industry, they'll stop and they'll sort of be looking at me, and I'm like, oh, that's right. This isn't normal for you. You didn't grow up in the music industry.
Right. You know? I think you're right. The entertainment industry, really.
Especially for me being a 100% lifelong sober person, where I've never done a drug or a drink or anything, it was kind of like its own kind of acid trip, going through that world in complete sobriety.
Exactly.
And just sort of being an observer, you know, like a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, literally, because I am a Connecticut Yankee. But I mean, I always called myself a Connecticut Yankee in a P.T. Barnum world. Because I always just felt like the circus was going on around me that
I know,
was part
I know.
Of.
You know, I know exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying, because I never done drugs either, and I wasn't much of a drinker, and still not much of a drinker. But I was always the designated driver. I always watched all the crazies do everything, and I could keep up with all of them, being completely sober. I don't know how I did it, but I could dance on the tables with the best of them. So
yeah, absolutely. I get you. Yes. Yeah. Yes, and I had fun. I don't feel like I missed anything by not being blasted the whole time. I had a blast, but I saw and experienced some great stuff.
Yep.
And then I went right from the music business to working on the Howard Stern station, 97.1 here in LA.
Oh,
and then
awesome.
I got a whole nother education in life.
And, I bet.
And I'm thrilled for it. I think it was the best way to spend decades of my life. But the world changed. And I think luckily for me, my career and my life changed at the same time the world changed, because honestly, a lot of things I did back then just would have been canceled. So, you know,
yeah,
we got
away with a lot back then.
Yeah. I mean, even my band, I mean, I don't even think people go, when are you going to do a reunion? I'm like, I don't think I can perform with this band now. Like, all the songs would be canceled. So,
oh my gosh, that's funny.
So stepping into this place, I mean, when I founded my nonprofit after my mom died, I just did it to honor her. It never in my life occurred to me I was going to become the quote unquote raising the vibration girl. It's funny because a dear friend of mine is Betsy Chassie, who directed a film called What the Bleep Do We Know? And is very popular in the metaphysical world. And she said, you know, your life changes forever, because now I'm the bleep girl. And everybody just thinks everything I say has some kind of metaphysical meaning because I'm the bleep girl. And I thought, oh, that's so weird. And then I walked right in and became the vibration girl. And now there's certain things I can't do and I can't say on social media. And I have a very dark sense of humor, as you know. But I can't put those things on social media, because now I'm the raising the vibration girl. So everything has to be positivity and love and light and earnestness, and it's changed me from the inside, and I love this life. But I can't, you know what I mean, you step into a responsibility and then you're that person,
right.
And the person I was in the 90s with some of those song titles, it's I can't really be that person anymore.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, becoming that person, because when I came out of playing in a lot of bands and then went off to college, when I was trying to get to know people, people would say, oh, you know, you actually are a little intelligent. I thought you were a big old druggie. I'm like, a big old druggie? I've never even done drugs. I've never even smoked pot. I mean,
yeah, me either.
I don't know how I had this reputation of being a big druggie. Yeah. It just cracked me up. But yeah, whatever field you are in, I don't know if this still stands today, but whatever field you're in, a lot of times the whole stereotype and persona goes along with it. And so,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what I hear what you're saying. And it's just funny that not everyone, but, you know, quite a few people would say, gosh, I thought you did a lot of drugs and you actually, you know, you kind of are a little smart.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, I was wandering around in that costume that looked like I was Dee Snider from Twisted Sister's little sister. I was Twisted Sister. And you know, with a name like Sheena Metal, right? I mean, I would do shows and people would walk up and just stuff bags of joints in my pockets. Like, thanks for the good show, man. I grew this myself. And I didn't know what to do with it. So I just threw it in my backpack because I didn't smoke it. And one night,
oh man,
I was on my way from a gig to doing one of my first radio show, was on at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning. And I was in a drive-through line at a Del Taco. And I had a bag full of weed that this guy had grown himself and brought to me. And I didn't know what to do with. So I just stuck it, like all the other presents people brought me at gigs, I stuck it in my bag. And this cop car pulls behind me in the drive-thru. And I'm like, oh my God, I have a giant bag of weed. And this is when weed was, you know, illegal. I've got a giant bag of weed in my backpack. And it is so fragrant because it's like fresh, right? So it's smelling up the whole car. I've got a long blonde wig. I've got a Monsters of Rock t-shirt. I'm wearing a flannel shirt. I have a bandana tied around my forehead. I have roach clip earrings. I'm like, if these guys pull me over, they are never going to believe it's not my pot.
Oh my God. So I had stories like that.
So I had to learn to farm the drugs out to other people when I got them as gifts. Because, you know, when you're naive, you don't know. When you don't live in that world, you don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have a story like that. I don't know if I'm going to say it on the air, though.
Okay.
But
I said mine.
You know, it was back when I, you know, I was a teenager in high school, and we were going to see, do you remember Diane Diamond?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, yeah, we were going to see Diane up at, I think it was the Whiskey. I can't remember, but I'll give you kind of an idea, okay? You know, we all went to the underground parking lot structure. Everybody was partying. Everybody back then, like you said, pot was illegal. And all my friends were smoking pot. All of them were drinking. You know, and here I am, the sober, clean, nerd queen. And I'm watching everybody do this. And I suddenly see a cop car driving by down the alley. And what happens? Everybody takes off running. And I'm at the end of the line. I'm like, oh my God, where do I go? You know, I guess I'm telling the story. Here we go. It's out in public now. I'm running. Should I finish this?
Yes.
Oh God. Okay.
I didn't know you started.
I know I started.
No pressure.
I didn't realize I was going to tell the whole story.
You were going for it.
Okay. You know, I get around you and I want to say everything. I don't know what it is about you, Sheena.
This is why I make a good spiritual counselor and minister, my friend.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And talk radio host. I'm like a bartender, a virtual bartender. Everybody tells me everything.
All right. So anyway, I was, you know, everybody dispersed and ran when they saw the cop car. And I'm standing there going, what do I do? You know, I didn't have anything to do with the, you know, partying. But I ran too. And all of a sudden, I heard freeze. And I'm like,
oh,
I turned around in slow-mo, you know, and I put my hands up in the air like you see in the movies. And that cop was, you know, legs spread, gun pointed at me. I mean, within a few feet, the gun would have killed me if he got trigger happy. I was just shaking like a leaf, and I was put against the wall. I was frisked. I think back in those days, I can't remember who frisked me, but I think it might have been a male cop.
Oh, yeah, I think male cops could frisk you back then.
Yeah, I think they did. And they ended up finding everybody. But the deal was the cop wanted to know who had the pot, and everybody lied. A lot of the joints went over the fence is what happened.
Sure, but, right.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, we didn't have any pot, officer, and I'm sure you could smell it like no tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.
But then he decided, since nobody would fess up, that he was going to go take us all out and make us stand with our hands on the cop car. I was flipping. You know, everybody else is all wasted and drunk and drugged out, and I'm as sober as can be, and I'm scared out of my wits.
Wow.
Because, you know, I don't remember how old I was, maybe 17? I don't know. And he just kept saying, where's the pot? And nobody would fess up. So he would ask us, have you guys ever been to a Hollywood jail? And I'm like dying right now. I'm having probably my first panic attack. And everybody was just, you know, they didn't seem like it was any big deal. No, officer. And I'm like, no, officer. I've never been to a Hollywood jail. And because he couldn't find any pot, he let us go. And he said, I better not, you know, better not see you again. And after the cops left, what happens? One of my friends, you know, remember those jackets? I think they were members only jackets.
Oh, yeah, with all the pockets.
With all the pockets, yes. And my friend pulls out a joint out of the top pocket on her shoulder and said, he didn't see this one. I'm like, God, because he said, you know, if I find any pot on any of you, you're all going to jail. I couldn't believe it. I can't believe I just shared that story.
I love that story. Yeah.
You know, that gun up to my stomach, Sheena, that made me never want to hang around with those people again.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
No, I'm teasing.
But yeah, I don't know how people do it. I mean, maybe it's just because, and we've talked about this on past shows, that we're both anxiety sufferers.
Yes.
I don't know how people get in cars drunk and not panic the entire time they're going to get pulled over. I mean, I don't think I could do it. I think my fear of jail, claustrophobia, and general nervousness about being in trouble. I'm not real good at that. And tell you something that carries over into my life. While we're talking about anxiety, that same fear that has kept me out of jail and kept me out of doing illegal things and getting in trouble with the law, it transfers over into, I have a weird fear. Now I'm going to tell a story that's embarrassing.
Okay.
I have a weird fear that people are mad at me. Now, it's not an unreasonable fear. Hmm. I don't think people are mad at me when they're not. I'm not always like, is that person mad at me? When people are legitimately mad at me, even if they have no reason to be and it's their thing, I feel very guilty and very bad when people are mad at me. It's something that I'm not really good at that.
Interesting.
And it's bad because it's almost like it can be almost like a kind of codependence in a way where you're allowing people's bad behaviors because you don't like people to be mad at you. But I have a really weird thing about that. And we live in a world, we've probably always lived in this world, but I think more and more, the more the world advances and people feel free to speak their minds, we live in a world where people unload on you. And sometimes it doesn't even have anything to do with you. But
let me interject. Mm-hmm. What would happen if somebody was mad at you? What do you feel? What's going on with you when that happens?
I just feel like I get like anxiety. And there was a time where I would like do anything I could to have somebody not be mad at me. If they were mad at me, like try to smooth it over, try to fix it. What can I do? I'm dancing bear. Now I have realized in my life, the more work I have done on myself and the more work I have done with others as a counselor, a spiritual counselor, that a lot of people just unload on you for no reason because they're not feeling good in their head. They take it out on somebody else.
Right.
And that by always trying to fix it and always trying to make it better. And mostly we're talking about, you know, romantic relationships, friendships. I don't have family, so not family relationships, work relationships. By always being the one running in there like a little mouse with my broom trying to sweep it all away, all I was doing was encouraging them to continue to have that behavior.
Mm.
But, I mean, when I get pulled over by a cop, I'm like stressing, even if it's just, I got a headlight out or here's a ticket. I mean, for me, it's like, oh my God. And then they go to check my license and I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Like there's anything on my license.
Oh my gosh. But I think
it's just part of anxiety, right? We go to this doomsday prophecy thing. And so in my life, people who, I sort of set myself up to be bullied by people who are looking for someone to go after, because I think, like, let's say you're a person that when you feel bad about yourself, you just unload on other people and you go to your friend and you're like, well, you this and you that and you that. Most people would just look at you and go, you know what? I didn't do any of those things. You know, go screw yourself. But with me, because I'm always trying to be a fixer and because it upsets me so much, I'm always trying to fix. And it's funny because I did not have a primary parent like that. My mom was not like that. My mom was the opposite of that. Like when I was a kid and teachers were mean and I would come home and tell my mom I was in trouble, my only fear was that she would go back to the school and kill the teacher because that Scorpio had like a zero BS tolerance. So it's, you know, not like anything. She never made me feel like that. She would always say, I don't know why you're like this. You just came out like this.
Well, I kind of think, and you know, please tell me if I'm wrong. It may have something to do with fear of rejection. Could it be?
I'm sure.
You know, people with anxiety, we do all kinds of twisted things in our head and then things don't make sense. And we think, why are we like this? You know, I have some of my own, you know, I don't want to call them weirdnesses, but I have some of my own fears that, you know, like yourself, I don't have that one about fear of people being mad at me, but I think that's because I've done a lot of work on myself. Someone's mad at me, I'm going to like, hey, bring it, you know, let's talk about it. I want to talk about it, lay it on the table right now.
Right.
But yeah, that's interesting, Sheena. Do you still feel pretty strongly in that area?
No, I think I've gotten a lot better. I don't feel so much that I have to defend myself anymore or I have to explain to you why this isn't rational. Now my policy just sort of is once you've been identified as somebody who, because it's kind of a form of emotional abuse to always make someone feel like they did something, even if they didn't do anything. Now I just walk away and I just, I'm done. I can't anymore. You know, I only have so much emotional reserve. And now, you know, I do 7 shows a week pretty much. And now on top of that, because that takes a lot of energy. And now on top of that, and a lot of those shows are helping people. On top of that, so much of my emotional energy now goes to help clients. And sometimes I take clients until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because, you know, the U.S. clients go to bed and then the European clients wake up. So, I mean, I take clients all day long. And that's a lot of hours and hours of people who have problems and need help. And I'm expelling so much of my energy on that. That I don't have time to expel my energy on people who are just looking to someone to take their problems out on anymore.
Yeah.
And I've had to eliminate a lot of, I noticed I had a lot of toxicity in my life, over my life. I had a lot of toxic people to come in and hadn't moved them on as most people do. It's funny because we did a show a few weeks ago about being in a relationship with a narcissist. And people always say, well, you know, why do narcissists always pick empaths? Why are narcissists always targeting me? Narcissists aren't targeting anybody. They're looking to get into a relationship with anybody who'll put up with their malarkey. But non-super empathic people, non-codependent people, just tell them to move on after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they won't tolerate it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're the ones that keep putting up with it, and we keep them around by continuing to put up with it. And and I have been guilty of that. I don't like discord. I always want everything to be okay. I want everything to work out. I don't function well in the midst of chaos. I love good stress. I live a high, good stress life. I don't mind having a lot of responsibility and being really busy, but I don't do well with bad stress and negativity. So I'm always trying to find a way to diffuse it. But I've learned in my life that in trying to diffuse it, you are accepting people's bad behaviors and you are allowing them to continue to treat you like that and to continue to treat other people like that. You're not setting an example for how they should treat others either.
Yeah.
So that's my embarrassing story. I don't think I've ever talked about that so openly.
Well, thank you for being so transparent and sharing. That's awesome.
That's why I pee a little when a cop pulls me over.
And when you talked about the cop pulling you over, I have another story about that one, but we'll talk about that another day. I did get pulled over, and I had to do a drunk test. And I wasn't drunk. I was the designated driver driving the drunk.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, that being pulled over and having to walk the line scared the bejeebies out of me, let me tell you.
I get flack sometimes if I go through an alcohol checkpoint and they ask how many drinks I've had and I say, no, I don't drink. And they don't believe you, so they keep asking follow-up questions. As a matter of fact, once I was in a very bad auto accident when I had my near-death experience when I was 23. And my doctor sent me to UCLA to their neuropsych department to get tested for what had happened to my head. And it's a teaching college, right? So they sat me in this room with a bunch of grad students, all very eager with their little clipboards. And one of the questions was, you know, how much drinking and drugs have you done? Because, of course, they want to dismiss that your head injury is not from the car accidents because,
right,
you know, you're baked all the time. And I said, none. And they said, well, what do you mean by none? And I said, none. And then somebody else said, well, what does that mean, none? And I said, it means I don't drink and I don't do drugs. Well, how many drinks and drugs have you done in the past? And I'm like, none. Well, what does none mean? And I'm like, it means none.
It just couldn't buy it.
Now, when you say none, how much does that mean? Like one drink, two drinks? They just could not fathom that the answer was none. So I have found with the police, sometimes it's just better to say, I haven't drank tonight.
Yeah.
Because my normal thing is to be like, I didn't do it. I don't drink at all. Don't be mad at me.
It wasn't me, officer. Really.
Don't be mad. But it's
don't be mad.
Nobody believes that. And I've had cops actually laugh. Like, oh, right. No, seriously.
Yeah.
So so that's a word to the wise. Don't give too much information.
You know, Shana, we got to do a lot more shows like this.
You
know?
You think so?
People can get to know us better. Well, not just that, but I think that we arrive at topics that people want to hear about anyway.
Yeah, and I'll put that on my list. Do you think people are always mad at you?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm not mad at you. Emery, our producer, is he mad at you? No, he's not mad at you.
He should be. All the stuff that he does. If anybody should be mad at me, it's Emery.
Sorry, Emery.
Yeah, because, man, sometimes I'm a lot in the managing my crazy schedule. He's a very good man. He takes very good care of me. And now, in turn, takes very good care of us.
I know he does. Very, very good.
That is a good topic because I think a lot of people probably feel that way and it keeps them in unhealthy situations.
Right. Or we can, you know, we can continue on telling our embarrassing stories.
Oh, we could do it in just embarrassing stories. I don't have all. I mean, I have, there's ones I won't. Okay.
So yeah, there's ones I will not say on the air.
So a friend of mine runs a storytelling night. A town over from where we both live, Diane. And it's really good. And I watch the storytellers and she's always saying, you need to come down and you need to do a story. And I would love to, but every time I start to think of a story from my past, it has something in it. Cause most of the people who go are her friends that are like baby boomers. And you know, and they're like in their 60s and late 60s and to early 80s. And I think, oh God, did they, and you know, I don't know that they've had the kind of background that I've had. And every time I start to think of a good story that I'm like, it either has some kind of craziness in it or something scandalous, or it's got some kind of a substance in it or sex. And I'm like, oh, I can't tell that one.
Can't tell that one.
I can't tell that one.
Can't tell that one.
Yeah. So I really want to go do this for her, but I'm trying to find something that's not too scandalous.
I see.
For her nice, you know, her nice retired people crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, we'll have to work on that.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stories I could tell from my Hollywood teenage rock and roll days, but There's details I would probably have to leave out.
Right. And all these other people, they have the sweetest, most wholesome stories.
I thought we were wholesome, though.
I know. I feel like we're wholesome. But they have these really sweet stories like, oh, you know, here's the one time that my dog did something cute.
We're drama students. How can we be that weird?
I don't know. My stories all end in, I got to work on it. My stories are crazy. I have to go to crazy storytelling night.
Well, look at us. So, we were crazy at one time and look at us now.
I know. And now we're just so normal.
Well, I don't know if I've gotten that far, but.
What else do you want to share about yourself? You shared so much for a Scorpio.
Yeah, you know, Scorpios, as you would say, I'm learning a lot about, you know, the characteristics of Scorpios, because I really never got into too much of that. But I guess we are very private. I mean, I don't share a lot of stuff about myself.
Yeah, I know when we said we were going to do this today, I sent Diana text and said, okay, what topics are off limits? because Scorpios like to keep things private. And I admire that. I mean, I think there's something really cool about that. But unfortunately, living your life on the radio as I have, you run out of things to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And people ask you things. And I think there's a difference in not volunteering and denying. And if somebody flat out asks me something, then I'm like, well, now I have to make the decision. Am I going to lie or am I going to tell the truth?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm very transparent. I'm an open book in so many areas of my life. However, there are things that I just won't share. And I don't, you know, nobody would ask because nobody would know. So, but it's nothing bad. Really, Sheena, there's nothing bad about me. I am really a goody-two-shoe.
All I can see is you up against a wall with a gun to your head.
Yeah, that was a little crazy.
And what other stories does she have to tell now?
Oh, man. And you talked about the holding the pot for everybody. Oh, my gosh. I remember going to a party. Can I say this on the air? I think so. I remember going to a party backstage at one of the clubs, Whiskey, Starwood, I don't remember. And Sandy West of the Runaways was my friend at the time. And she said, Diane, I mean, and she was huge. She was a big rock star at the time. And she's like, Diane, come back here. And I'm a teenager. I'm innocent. I don't know what's going on. But she brings me in some room and there's a huge bowl of Coke. And she's like, help yourself. And I'm like, oh, no. I don't do that stuff. Of course, scared the daylight out of me. But, you know, after I left, I told my friend that I was with, and she's like, you should have got it for me.
Do
that either.
When I told the story about the marijuana that went in the trash, my drummer was like, you threw out joints? So from now on, I just passed everything to the band, and I let them take care of it. That's probably illegal that somebody gave me drugs, and I pass it to people in the band. I don't know.
Well, I am not passing a bowl of Coke. That is not going to happen.
But, you know, that's just the way that life was.
And was back then,
if you
then,
didn't
yes.
grow up in that time, I remember the first couple of times that I went with my band in the early 90s to do interviews on some of the bigger music stations, the FM music stations. Mm-hmm. And there would be Coke all over the...
Oh, yeah.
People would just be doing it, and there'd just be a big old pile of it on the console there. You sit down in front of the microphone, and it would just be there, and there'd be the remnants of lines, and people just partied out. I remember the first time I walked in the station that I worked at on the Howard Stern station, and there was like somebody's like couple like lace panties were just like somebody just thrown them in the corner of the room. And I was like, whose were those? And what's the story behind that?
Yes.
You know, and that's when you realize how innocent you really are, right? Like all these things go on, like I say, that I've seen have not participated in. And it's been kind of an interesting ride.
What was that movie with Jennifer Aniston and she was hooked up with a rock star? I can't remember the name of it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
No? Okay. No. Yeah, because her lifestyle And hooking up with this rock star's lifestyle is kind of a lot of stuff I saw as a young teen. And it goes way beyond the drugs, but I think we'll have to have coffee over that one, Sheena.
Okay, we'll have to have, I'll tell you some of the stories we're not going to tell here.
Yeah, we're not telling them on the air.
And the thing is, I would tell those stories 100% on somebody else's show. But I just don't know that they belong here on Side by Side.
I know.
Yes.
Gosh.
Yes. Yes.
Look at the reputation we have now, Sheena. We're tainted.
I know. No, I think we're good. I think it's good that people get to know us as real people so they don't feel like things that have happened to them haven't also happened to us. Like we're just sitting here on Mount Olympus, you know, in yoga position, being perfect.
Yes.
I think it's important that people know that they're, for me as a spiritual counselor, it's important that people know that I'm flawed, that I've been through stuff too. I've been in the bad relationships. I've been with the narcissists. I've let people take advantage of me so that people don't think they're talking to somebody who's done everything right and they've done everything wrong. I think it's so important to show your human side to people.
I agree 100%. You know, I used to think that therapists and counselors, you know, were perfect people until I got in the business.
Yeah. Yes.
And then I found out they're the all truth. Sick. No, I'm kidding. They're not all sick.
Well, kidding, but not kidding.
But there are a lot of therapists that aren't too well. So, you know.
Yes.
I found that out in grad school.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Somebody told me the other day they think people become therapists to heal themselves. Do you think that's the truth?
That is the truth. One truth that was for me. That's why I went into grad school, because I wanted to fix my anxiety.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, but there are a lot of dysfunctional people in the business. And I remember a professor saying in grad school, if you have serious issues, you're not going to make it. You have to work on yourself before you get into this field, or you're going to transfer all your emotions onto your client. And that is not what you want to do.
Yeah. And I see that sometimes. I see, I have clients come to me and tell me what other psychics have told them. And you can tell when you hear it that it's so obviously something that is their, they've been, it's their own imprinting that they've passed on to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times there are psychics and mediums who, you know, have been very badly burned in relationships. So they're very jaded. So they pass that jadedness on to you. You know, everybody's cheating. Everybody's bad. Men are terrible. And I'm like, whoa. This doesn't sound like the person you're dating. This sounds like this other person has some problems. So it's hard. It's hard because you have your own emotions and your own feelings, and you have to work really hard when you're dealing with a client not to pass your own stuff onto them, to make sure the
Very
messages
true.
That you're passing are either spiritual or psychological, but they're not coming from your own experience and things that have upset you in your life. You have to step out of it.
Yes.
And that's a lot of people don't know how to step out of it.
And now I'm being neurotic, Sheena.
What?
I want to say that not all therapists are dysfunctional. I have a lot of colleagues that are absolutely fabulous and very stable and very solid.
Diane does not want therapists to be mad at her.
I know.
Are they mad at you right now? I
don't want to get off this show and just be hammered with phone calls going, what did you say that for?
Well, I just said it about psychics, so maybe we're both in trouble now. But it's true, no matter if you are giving advice to people, even if you're a teacher or a doctor, if you're in any place where you're imparting advice to people, don't put your own life experience in the middle of it.
Agree.
It's not. I'm seeing it happen a lot in the medical profession right now, because there are a lot of people in the medical profession who are very prejudiced against people who are overweight. I've dealt with that my whole life, right? I go in there with a hangnail. They're like, what did you do? It's because you ate too much.
Oh.
You know what I mean? This is, a shark bit off my foot. Well, it's because you're fat. The shark saw you and thought you were a whale. Like, it's always, you know.
Oh, God,
so
that's
I see
terrible.
Now a lot of these doctors are really pushing people towards dangerous drugs and weight loss surgeries. Weight loss surgery, when you have like 20 pounds to lose, really? Because if there's this, they don't like fat people. So they're they're pushing it on their patients. So I think it happens all the time, right? Educators will push people into a certain profession because that's where they want them to be. I saw that a lot, teachers trying to push my friends out of going into the arts. I mean, I just think when you're at a place where you're influencing people's minds and hearts and souls and bodies, you have to be so careful not to put your own prejudices and judgments in the middle of that.
Yes, very true.
You know, wow. I don't like narcissists, but I'm not going to tell you not to date one because that's not my business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to date a narcissist and you're not going to get out of the relationship, then that says something about you. You know, you have to get to a place where you're aware of the red flags and you run,
you know, just keep running.
That's right. Because
just keep running until you can run no further.
There are some people that are just so toxic.
Yeah.
And they will drain you and they don't want to be well. They don't even know that they're not well. So these are the types of people that once you are very healthy, you're not attracted to any of that. You got to read my book sometime, Sheena. Love Hurts.
I would love that. Yes.
Love Hurts, a spiritual journey to wholeness.
Oh, I love that. That's so wonderful. And did writing that book heal you?
Yes. There's so many things that happened with that book. And reading it, you'd probably understand it because the book is a lot about me. And I share a lot of stories, personal stories. Not the kind that we said today, but, but you know, personal spiritual stories that brought me to certain places.
Yeah.
And yeah, I learned a lot and I grew a lot from that book. But it's apparently helped a lot of people. So
I love that.
A university contacted me and said they wanted to get the book for all their students. And I thought, how wonderful is that?
That is the biggest thing. That's awesome. And I hate to end by saying we're out of time, but
we are out of time.
Where can people find you online? And we'll be back next week for more fun.
Yeah. You can find me at DianeKatz.com. That's Diane without an E. And Diane Katz Band on Facebook and over at Sheena's house.
Yeah, she'll be at my house because not only now am I a crazy cat lady, I'm also a crazy cats lady. So,
and I got to make sure I tell her I'm not mad at her.
Yes, please come over and tell me you're not mad at me, and bring over your police friends to tell me they're not mad at me too.
Oh gosh,
this is so awesome. I'm at SheenaMetalsSpiritual.com. Text me if you just want to get to know me better. I'm at 818-437-0886, and I'm on social media everywhere at Sheena Metal. That's Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and X, formerly Twitter. Until we see you next time here on iHeartRadio, I'm Sheena Metal. This is Diane Katz. I'm a psychic medium and energetic healer. She's a mental health educator, and each week on the show, we're working to get people the help and the healing that they need. Side by side. We'll see you next time. And thanks, Diane.
Yeah, thank you. See you next time, guys.
Say you have a problem, think it might be all in your head. With a counselor, or maybe a psychic instead.
Doesn't matter how you roll, when life has taken such a toll. Clenching fist along with your scream. I'm here to heal your mind, and we are here to heal your soul. Time to follow your